When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Welcome to the Box Set Pod. Tonight, a special episode on the OA. Yes, the OA. You've heard people talk about it. You've heard people say how great it is. Maybe you have watched a bit of it, or maybe you haven't. If you have, wow, there's a lot to get your head around. The question is, should you put your time to watching the OA? We will try and figure that out. We've got a couple more people joining us, but it's Howell and Jamie here starting alone, which gives us a chance to comment on a couple of things. First of all, numerous people have sent me... it was released today, a style guide by the radio group that we used to work for. And I haven't commented on Twitter. I've not said anything about it. Jamie, as usual, was blissfully unaware of it until about 5 minutes ago.
I didn't even know it was happening.
But, you know, lots of people asked why we left the full-time job that we did leave and turned to podcasts. And I think the world is beginning to answer that question. And that is all we have to say about it. We wish everybody luck in trying to make a living in this world of speaking for a living. Now... aside from that, I got criticised after last week's podcast for hyperbole. I was desperately trying to say Neil Patrick Harris in Lemony Snicket is a rare thing. His performance is a rare thing. And I stand by that because I think I was trying to say he was having fun with the role, but that kind of doesn't say it enough. Or at least I convinced myself afterwards when I listened to it back, I was in awe of how poorly I could articulate what it was that I was trying to say. But at the same time, I was still convinced that I was right. And the reason is that I can't think of many examples of other people who are like it. And that was the point, was it's not very often now that you see somebody really making the most of a role to a degree that he does in that thing. And I think the more you watch it, the more you'll agree with me, Jamie. That's what I think.
Yeah, I mean, I think, yeah, you, the problem with you, Howell, is, you know, you get excitable, you get very excitable, and you kind of, you get a bit hyperbolic, and you tend to sort of make references that are just a little bit, maybe put people on the back foot, but your points are not necessarily wrong.
I think one of the problems I've got is that I inherited from my father quite an intelligent brain. It's just that I've never, actually used it. So I don't actually have the vocabulary that I need to try and make my point, and that can turn into a half-hour discussion instead of a pithy sentence. That's the problem.
Yeah, it did take a while.
But I have been trying to think since of any comparison and of someone who really makes the most of a role. Can you, and I ask you again, can you think of someone who you think has got the script and just gone, right, I'm going to run away with this?
In Silicon Valley, the guy who plays, what's his name? The guy who plays, the guy who plays Ehrlich. Isn't it? It's Ehrlich, yeah. Really is enjoying that role, isn't he? And that's but it. Yeah, there are, and I get that. I understand that it's nice seeing a performer enjoying performing and, you know, reveling in it and taking it.
What Ehrlich's got in Silicon Valley is that thing that I said of you can't imagine anyone else cast as that role. You just couldn't switch him for anybody else now. What Neil Patrick Harris has got for him is...
harder for him, isn't it? Jim Carrey, he's back.
Yeah, well, no, what he's got with that role is the ability to do that, to do what Ehrlich's doing, but with a character that is theatrical. So he gets to do it 20 times bigger than Ehrlich gets to do it. And that's what makes it slightly different. He's got more opportunity than the guy who plays Ehrlich does. But yes, they both do that. Listen to this. I've just had a text from one of the people we expected to be on tonight, Jack Boardman, saying, I'm afraid I can't join you this evening. I've just arrived in A&E after managing to throw a pan of water down myself. A pan of boiling water. That's all the difference.
Oh, my God.
I'll have to take a back seat this week. Looking forward to listening, though, as I thought OA was a load of old bollocks and a rubbish grown-up version of Stranger Things. Jack, well, obviously the injury isn't bad enough for him to still critique the OA, but we do hope he's all right. Jack,
yeah.
hope you're okay. Take care. We'll pass on your comments. We'll pass on your comments. One quick question. How many episodes have you watched? Is this what you want to be asked? No, I'm texting Jack.
Oh, right.
If he can reply to that before he enters the nurse's triage, that would be great, because I think that's quite important to us.
It would be great to still get him on the pod. You know,
that was my first thought. Was, oh my God, this would be great.
Is there a way?
Anyway, okay. But one person who is joining us from London, in just above his lair, is Matthew Wandless.
Hello, everyone.
Hi, Matt.
Hello.
Matt, you've just missed quite a phenomenal text from our work experience boy, Jack. Afraid I can't join you tonight. I've just arrived in A&E after managing to throw a pan of boiling water down myself. I will have to take a back seat this week. But then, still manages to critique the OA. Looking forward to listening this week. I thought the OA was a load of old bollocks and a rubbish grown-up version of Stranger Things. So, Jack, Godspeed to you and the nurses who have to deal with you. Goodness me.
Oof.
How do you throw a pan of boiling water?
Man,
down
I know. I once got.
It's going to be bad, isn't it?
Yeah.
I'm imagining he's just learned how to make boiled eggs as well, and it's really, really.
It's a big step for a student at that moment. Well, it's a shame to get burned. Yeah. You probably won't do it again. I mean, my sister once. We had an argument. I was washing up. She was making a cup of tea. She poured boring hot water out of the kettle. Boiling hot water. From the kettle onto my arms.
What?
Yeah.
How old were you?
We were about. I was 21. About 12. She was 13.
Mother.
I know.
That is nuts.
What's the worst injury you've ever had, Matt?
I've actually done all right with injuries most of my life. There was one time when I was. God, I must have been like 18 or something, and I was at a party and I got depressed because the girl I wanted to pull wouldn't do anything with me, and she got off with a friend of mine. And I got really drunk and I was jogging on the spot for some reason outside, and I had my hands in my pockets and I caught my foot on a little chain and just went smash and landed on my nose. And Tiernan, who's been on the pod, was there, and he said that when I got up my face looked like Apocalypse Now. Broke my nose and I had to pull a piece of gravel out of my nose.
Oh my god.
Yeah.
Well,
really?
Yeah. There was, and my nose is bent forever because of it.
When you said you've been quite lucky in life, it reminded me of the one morning when I was young. I remember sitting on the downstairs toilet at home and thinking to myself,
here we go.
I've never been in hospital for anything other than birth. I must have been about, not eight, I must have been about 13. I've never been in hospital for anything other than birth. Aren't I lucky? Then went down the hill in my garden and into the woods at the back where some boys had built a rope swing. I then fell 20 foot from that rope swing. Landed on my chin. And had to go to casualty to get my chin sewn up.
Wow, that is pretty spectacular. I've never broken a bone other than my nose that time.
Wow. Right. Let's, speaking of injuries and healing, let's talk about the OA.
Right, so let's just, first of all, you two hadn't seen it before tonight. Well, before you were meant to have just watched the first episode, weren't you? That was the idea. I've watched it all. You were meant to have watched one episode. How did you get on?
It's very difficult. If you make it beyond the first half of the first episode, I think it's very difficult not to carry on. I've watched three, possibly four. Somebody has just been banged on the back of the head. That's where I'm up to.
That was the end of the third, I think, okay. If I remember.
Okay. Where are you, Matt?
I just finished the fifth.
Okay. I have so much to discuss, and I've even prepared for this podcast tonight because I didn't want to hog it. I've tried to turn them into questions, but I have written a little setup. Would you like to hear the setup?
Yeah.
Sure.
If you haven't seen the OA is the name of a woman who has been missing since she was a teenager. She's got that name instead of her real name, Prairie. Her parents find her again after seeing footage of her throwing herself off a bridge in New York. This is all in the first 5 minutes. She survives. Yeah. But she has returned and can see, whereas when she left, she was blind. The question is, where has she been and how did she get her eyesight back, I suppose? And she seems to have gone on some kind of serious supernatural plight of some kind. Prairie is played by the co-writer and co-creator Britt Marling, who in one episode befriends a bully who attacks her with his dog and various other lost individuals. The episode takes a big turn into a backstory that you don't expect, and the entire story becomes something else entirely. In episode two, we begin to find out the real story of what's happened to her and where she has been. My sister ditched it, labelling it pretentious tosh at the point of the sex scene in the first episode. And Jamie...
Which bit? Oh, right, really? That's early.
And Jamie has said how great he thinks it is. With such a variety of opinions, it's time to find out what our panel of regulars from around the world think. And that's Matthew in London and Jamie in Manchester. Here's what I think we need to get to the bottom of on this podcast. A, general opinions and first impressions, and judgment based on its own brief. In other words, just like people who watch Lost loved it, what are your thoughts on the world of the story? And then B, just like Lost, from a step back, was an endless tease fest, possibly. What do we think of where the series is going, and should we stick with it if we have issues with that? Which I do. My first impressions were that it was melodramatic, slightly overacted, or at least teen-acted. I can see exactly what Jack means by an adult version of Stranger Things, a teenage version of Stranger Things. Fairly annoying. And then the opening credits happen about an hour in, and you just go, what is going... Like, you literally, out loud, didn't everybody go, what is going on? So there we go. So, first question is, just a little side first question. Does anyone else know why my sister had a problem with that naked sex scene?
I'm trying to think why she would have. I mean, it was establishing the character of the bully, wasn't it? And he's a bit of a, obviously he's a very volatile character who's a bit in love with his self while he's having sex. Is that the moment that she's commenting?
Well, I just think it was just like a bit soulless. It was a bit kind of, it was supposed to be soulless, but it was a bit shock value for shock value's sake. He's then standing in a window with his knackers out.
Yeah.
And his dad opens the door. And there's nothing really that's warmed, by that point, there's nothing that's warmed me to anybody because the main part, Prairie, I don't particularly feel too sorry for, and she's talking some weird sci-fi stuff that I'm going, oh, what's going on? And then this kid is just horrible. And then it feels like the series is trying to appeal to teenagers by being all risque and moody and naked. And
it was very weird, wasn't it? And now with a wider context, it just seems really odd.
Yeah.
It's not like a show that often goes into sexy bits. There's been two sex scenes in five episodes, and they've both been pretty graphic.
Yeah.
But, like, I don't really know why. It's one of those things where it's like, oh, that's weird. You decided to show the boobs.
Do you also get what Jack means about... Because I actually wrote down here, Goonies for teenagers. Do you know what Jack means about Stranger Things for teenagers? A bit sort of Ouija board, spooky nonsense kind of thing.
Yeah, I guess.
Yeah, I see that. I see that...
I don't understand. Do you know why your sister turned off at that particular scene?
Yeah, for that because she was like, oh, it seems like another series that's just trying to appeal to teenagers and a bit of shock value. And I thought maybe she was being a bit of a prude, but then I also thought, well, do you know what? If you did find that annoying, there hasn't been much up until this point, other than that central question of what's going on. There hasn't been much to make you really enjoy the world.
Mm. Okay, I don't know if I agree with that, but...
I don't know, yeah. I mean... I'm looking at it from a perspective of watching it all, so I do see a point like about, you know, maybe, but the sex scene, I didn't see the shock in it. I thought it was just establishing the character who he seems a bit of a knob quite clearly, you know,
it does speak to his because he asks the OA about it later and he's not entirely comfortable with the fact that it's just meaningless sex.
Yeah.
So I think actually it does give a grounding in him and he's sort of struggling with his own narcissism.
Yeah, there is the idea that somehow all of these kids, there are a bunch of teenagers in the first episode who are kind of drawn in by the OA a little bit, and you get a feeling that all of these characters have to have things to heal from.
Yeah, and I get her point about it feeling like this sort of teen formula kind of show. It does feel like that very early in the first episode.
Yeah,
like you said, when it introduces this backstory and the credits come in, I was just like, that was it for me. I was like, oh, I'm hooked. Like this, I want to know the story now. Like, so it had drawn me in.
Episode. Oh, he's a bit of a dick there, and then he sets his dog on her, and I was like, if it wasn't for the monumental curtain lifting that happens an hour in, if the whole series carried on like that, I'd be like, oh, what a horrible world that we're having to watch.
Well, you see, that's interesting that you thought that, because for me, like, I thought, oh, if they're this good at, like, delivering a really, like, change of direction... Like, I don't mind twists if they're done with like some degree of creativity and some degree of like
I'm agreeing with you.
Skill and talent. Yeah,
that's so what I'm saying. When that happened, at that moment that the world changes so dramatically, you go, "Wow!" Suddenly you sit back and you go, "I'm not a critic now. Take me away. Lead me away. You obviously, the god of this story knows what they're doing, and I should just be quiet and put up with it and enjoy it, you know." From that point on, you trust them. But prior to that, it's a different thing. Even down to the school teacher in there excuses the bully because of something that the OA says to them. And part of me still goes, this is pretentious tosh. That kid deserves, as she said at this point, to be taken away from disrupting the other kids. What about the poor choir kid who got punched in the throat?
I knew you'd feel bad for that poor, because you from your drama background, Howell.
Not from your drama background. If it was a sports kid, what you mean? Let's flip that round. You don't care about that because he's got a drama background.
No, I can see what Jamie's saying, in that I can imagine you've been punched in the throat a few times.
I have not. I've been grabbed in the throat by actors.
Howell's punched me. Sucker punched me. Me in the gut once, his camcorder.
That's right.
Anyway, that's a long story. But I mean, actually, that's all of it. But I mean, the point being that you know, he is a dislikable character, and I can see why early on, you know, you're very much turned against his character.
My point is that we're supposed to go, oh, well done, what a win, you've changed the teacher's mind. For the sake of this philosophy that she gives her. And I'm going, no, actually, you can have that philosophy, but the kid needs taken out of school.
Don't you think, though, that the kid is always better to try and save the kid rather than just remove him from the environment?
as somebody who is a teacher for a whole 2 hours a week, if one kid punched another one in the throat, I would not let that kid in this classroom ever again. Like, he can go in separate lessons.
That's it, is it? That's the end of his chances at 16 years old.
Well, he has to be put in another...
school where they beat people.
Not necessarily another school, but he has to be separated. You can't, for the sake of the rest of the class... You can't have him sat in the room with the kid that he punched without any repercussions. That's a very true.
No, not without any repercussions, but that's a very. I mean, we're getting, as we so often do, sidetracked by a small issue on the show. But I believe in leaving no child behind.
I believe in the same thing. I just believe that he should be put in a cage so that he cannot punch someone in the throat.
Right, okay.
Discipline. She's going in.
Anyway, I think they did enough with that character in the first episode to know that there is something in there that can be worked on and helped rather than just someone who is a sociopath.
100%. I'm just saying he should have been separated and put in detention at least.
Well, he was put in detention, and you see that later.
Not until episode 2, So my experience in the first one is going, hang on a minute, I like the philosophy, but this whole thing isn't making me go, oh, I'm siding with her, who is...
You very much need something to be redeeming in the world, don't you? You really need a little happy place in shows that you watch, don't you? You're not a fan of bleak...
Hey, I love The Walking Dead.
That's true, but The Walking Dead is all about hope, isn't it?
I think
really,
so.
It shows you the darkness, but it's there's always this idea of finding somewhere idyllic. But I remember, like, you guys had a real big problem with Transparent because you didn't like anyone in it.
To some degree,
that's true. But I think it's more about, for me, it's more about thinking. A dramatist needs to not take a corner that is unrealistic. If she's really... That argument that the teacher made is so strong and correct by any educator's standards that whatever you do with him, you don't leave him in the classroom. It's such a strong argument that her argument in counter to that needs to be so much better than it was. And it was nice, but it wasn't... It didn't make me go, oh my God, that's an amazing...
I thought it was pretty good, that scene, actually. Realize I thought it flipped it on its head quite nicely, because it wasn't just being excluded from the class, it was being expelled from the school.
That's what they were talking about. That's true. Yeah, you're right.
Asheville, which was awful. But anyway, going back to a sort of wider context and talking about being hooked in. Now, I've felt hooked in pretty early.
Right.
I don't like unsolved mysteries. And as a consequence, I'm very wary of this show because for the first at least 2 or 3 episodes, it felt like reading a Dan Brown novel. Where like I remember when I read The Da Vinci Code, which is the only one I've ever read and the only one I ever will read, that after the first couple of chapters, I was like, oh no, I'm going to have to read this whole fucking book. I read the whole book and hated every minute of it just to find out what fucking happened, and then was just furious. That's how I felt after the first couple of episodes of this. I was like, oh, I'm going to have to watch this to the end. But now that it's starting to sort of expand, and it's definitely more than a teen drama, I think. It's got a lot more sort of existential and curious. But I'm still not convinced.
This is moved on then to my part B, which was taking a step back and what, because I have exactly the same issue. You know, my issue with whodunits is basically the idea that when there's only one question to answer and you're asked to wait and wait in suspense, it's sort of cheating and slightly monotonous. And you go, oh, for God's sake. In this case, the subject matter becomes quite dark. We move away from the Goonies and we move away from the surprising backstory that appeared that moment in the first episode. And we move into something that is quite dark. And if I'm being harsh, I almost felt like it was a bit... A shit reviewer would say a classy saw, right? a nightmare.
A classy saw.
Yeah, a nightmarish situation, you know, like the Saw films. A nightmarish situation which changes to how do they get out of this. And so my questions for that are, would you ever watch this again once you find out what the answer is? Would you go back and watch it again? And number two, don't you feel slightly like Lost with the endless carrot being dangled to get us through some quite sick subject matter?
I definitely worry about Lost.
I mean, at the end of one of the episodes, Sarah, the wife just went, just tell us what happened to you! And we're enjoying it. But that's the point. It's like, oh, wouldn't it be wonderful if you gave us the answer and then still kept us entertained?
Yeah. Yeah, if you just said, right, look, these are the key points you need to know. This, and this. Yeah. Now let me give you some detail.
I mean, guys, you take the whole fun out of storytelling.
No. That's how I would want it in a real world situation. I'd want to know three key things so that I understood where we are, and then you can tell me the detail. But obviously in the show, this is how it has to go. You have to eke it out slowly.
But there's countless examples of where that has happened. And we've mentioned Columbo in three episodes running now, but in Columbo you see who the murderer was. You know, you find the answer out at the very beginning, and then it's the game of watching how they catch the spider, which is great. Another example, Jamie, is that we've talked before about how great Vince Gilligan is at doing exactly that.
Yeah,
giving you exactly the answer you're looking for and then complicating it and taking it to another level. With this, I really am almost like Matt with his book. I'm almost angry at myself for carrying on watching, but it's so well made. It's had a lot of funding. It's so well produced that I'm, of course, going to carry on watching it. You know, I'm kind of angry at it.
Yeah, and like I know it, like the twist, or at least the reveal, is something that does dangle in front of you, and also it does like your sister pointed out, I think you did earlier, it sort of teeters on the edge of being very pretentious constantly. But actually, kind of what I like about it as well, like, is that it embraces its pretentiousness. Like it goes, it almost like just accepts and goes, let me take you into this completely elaborate world and these elaborate fantasy kind of ideas that comes out of the show as you watch more, you'll see. And it embraces that fully and just goes headlong into it. And I really enjoy shows that do that, that at least, you know, give it everything. I understand, like, there's been a lot of criticism of this show, especially of its final episode of the series, which got a lot of criticism.
It's bound to happen,
But I blooming loved the last episode of the series, and I thought it was, I don't understand why people aren't happy. It's clearly they're setting up a second series. Obviously, they're going to do that. But do you get some satisfaction, and do you get a couple of amazing scenes? Yes.
Well, tell me this based on that satisfaction, right? And this should determine whether or not you think I should carry on with it. Here's the thing. If the answer to the question of what happened to you is a supernatural or science fiction ending, I am going to feel like I've been sold a bum deal. Because last week, is everyone still there? It just sounded like we got cut off.
No, I'm still here. I think something happened with my mic, maybe. I'm not sure.
Do you remember last week at the end? By the way, I failed to say how amazing the baby acting is in Lemony Snicket. I can't believe any of us didn't say how great the baby is in Lemony Snicket. But I criticised it. I did say that the baby being able to eat metal annoyed me because it was the only thing that wasn't possible in the real world. Now, this OA is basing itself on the idea that there are special people amongst us in the real world, and it acts as a metaphor for us to find our reason to live, to explore ourselves. For that to remain true, to me, it needs to be that everything that happens is possible or explainable in terms of coincidence. So there can be a metaphorical science fiction thing, but also, it could also be explained by this. So in order for the fantastical to talk to our world and the boring school bully mum dad confused world, then there has to be this explanation that's real and wonderful at the same time. So if the moral of the story has to be as with the teacher who's persuaded to give him a second chance, you must live your life with great intention, hold on to what's good. Does the trail of breadcrumbs and does the answer, Jamie, actually go more supernatural?
Well, there's no doubt there's a supernatural element to it, but
that
I don't see that as a bad thing, and I don't know why. Like it's very. I don't want to go into much. I'm going to spoil stuff, but all I'll say is that you've got to, if you invest in this like world that she takes you into, you're one of the people sat in that desolate house around the torchlight listening to her tell this story. If you can so just accept wanky. It and go with it. But you know what? What's wrong with a little bit of like campfire storytelling? Just someone taking you off in a fantasy environment and there is a supernatural element to that. And like if you embrace
nothing's wrong with that if the fantasy isn't expected to be real. So a fable, you know, when somebody says once upon a time there was a dragon and it breathed fire across an entire village, you know from the start that this is a morality story that we're supposed to be learning from the metaphor. In this world, we go, welcome to the real world where a girl has possibly been abducted and we need to find out what happened to her. She's now going to sit down and tell her story. Now, if the very end can be, did everything that happen... did everything she said happen actually happen? Or is this part fiction? That's fine with me. If, however, we're expected to go, well, why the fuck did you tell me to leave my door open again? Oh, there's a magical thing actually happening through my front door now. That's more problematic for me because it doesn't set itself up as a dragon story. It sets itself up as real world going to dragon story.
I don't know if I agree with you on that, because I think some of the stuff that's brought in as early as episode two already shows you that there are different things afoot. The way she deals with the teacher, I don't feel like that's all just entirely based on her her words. I think there is something else going on there. I think she has a way of influencing people.
Yeah,
I think
but
that's,
you don't know.
I think they've shown that.
My point
no,
is
but
you don't
they're,
know you
no, but they've hinted at that.
Possible.
And then also, I don't want to give away anything, but there's explicit parts in episodes two and three which show that this is not altogether in things that we understand already. Also, this is a girl who's gone from sighted to blind to sighted again. Sure. I understand where you're coming from, Howell, and I do want a rational answer at the end of this, and it's one of the things that I'm worried about is when the reveals do start to drop, am I going to be annoyed by them, disappointed in them, or confused by them?
Yeah.
But this show is going at a different pace to something like Lost, because the thing with Lost and the thing that it was always guilty of was that it would be 35 minutes of namby-pamby bullshit followed by five minutes of just like epic reveal but nothing ever being fully revealed, just like, you know, little nipples and bum cracks. This show is much
exactly
more bold.
Like a bum crack.
That's what I'm talking about. You get Kate's nipples and Sawyer's bum cracks. This show is much more bold, I think, and it does in five episodes that I've watched about as much as Lost did in season one, I'd say, in terms of showing you the whole naked picture. Mm-hmm. It's winning me over.
It won me over from the snow, but then I started to go, oh god, if the answer to this entire question is that somebody waves a magic wand, I'm going to be really annoyed.
Yeah, fair enough, but I wasn't won over until maybe end of episode four or somewhere in episode five. I'm still not. I'm not completely won over. I'm very wary. Mm. I've been hurt before.
Yeah.
But I'm at the moment. I'm giving it latitude, and then he had a wander. I don't particularly like Britt Marling, you know.
Now that's another question that I wrote down is I feel like Brad Pitt has executive produced this. I feel like a bunch of very creative people who either metaphorically or really enjoy a good spliff have got together and made something something that is borderline pretentious. And I actually wonder whether it was a wise decision for her to cast herself in this role, because I think she overacts her reactions sometimes. That's how I felt.
I think she has, like, my problem with Britt Marling is that she has got a bit of a, she's been pigeonholed. This is a role that she's kind of played in films before, similar role anyway. She's played like strange kind of otherworldly characters before in TV and film. So I just feel like maybe,
she created this, Jamie. She's made the decision.
She did, and you know, it's her decision to play. I mean, she's perfect for. I think she's perfect for it. But sometimes I feel like I've never seen her do anything other than a slightly weird character. That's kind of what she's known for. But
because you haven't seen enough Community, mate. She's in an episode of that. That's very good.
She's in Community.
Oh yeah, she's in an episode with where she's her and Britta both think each other is a lesbian. So they try and be friends with each other to be cool. It's very funny.
That's
funny. Well, what I like about one of the things that's good, and one of the things that does sort of deviate it from Lost is that it's very. Some episodes are like 30 minutes long, some are 50 minutes long, some are like the length of episodes changes depending on how much they want to get into that particular sort of episode and how much of the story they want to reveal. So like there's 8 episodes in total, but they're all varying lengths, and I really like that. It's not just constrained to like we've got to do an hour now, so we've got to do an hour of TV, stretch it out or make it however long for whatever we're trying to get in. It changes the length deciding on how much they want to tell in that particular episode, and it's not trying to play by the conventions. It's very much built for a binge watch. That's why you're struggling to stop yourself carrying on with the carrot dangling in front of you, and it knows it's doing that, and it knows it's going to give you that reveal if you stick with it and go with it as quickly as you want. So
I just can't imagine how with the whodunit thing, how I'm going to be satisfied by this result.
Well, no, it does set itself up as something so big that it's very difficult to meet those expectations.
How can you ever
I can't tell you anything without. I can't. I can't say anything without. You know, I can't tell. All I can say is that there are some really great, brilliant scenes. I thought anyway that are coming up that satisfied me. And even if the story has angered some people and some elements have left people concerned or frustrated by it. Doesn't mean that the journey wasn't darn fun, and doesn't mean that I won't watch the second series, which is definitely going to be set. Has been set up, and you know, you got to the reason you're 3 episodes in, Howell. You went to watch 1. You've watched 3, haven't you? Because you are. There's a part of you that's actually engaged in this world, and the problem with you at the moment is you're thinking, "Oh, I'm not going to like the ending of this." Well, just forget about the ending for now. Just focus on.
It doesn't lend
itself. So wise, Jamie. Always so wise.
the debate that I'm having with myself is, am I sticking with this purely because I just want to know what bloody happened? And I'm really not sure because, you see, I have an issue. I'm now going to talk, so that I don't spoil it, I'm going to talk about another film, but you'll know what I'm talking about in parallel, okay? So no reactions to the parallel. The film Room. Has anybody watched the film Room?
Which one? There's 2 films called The Room.
The one that came out last year where the mother and daughter are kept in a shed.
Actually, no, I've seen neither, but go on.
Mother and daughter are kept in a shed, okay? Kept hostage by her ex-husband, by the kid's father, sorry. And we watched this thing and it was a really well-made, really well-acted drama, and we came out and Sarah thought it was great, and I came out and I was, as I am about miserable things quite a lot, I was quite angry at it, and the point of my anger was that some people who go through situations like that, it's so, it must be so disturbing and such a serious subject matter to deal with, that if you're going to deal with something like that kind of abduction and rape and things, that you have to make sure that you're really saying something about those situations that's above and beyond just, oh, wouldn't this be difficult, and isn't a mother's love for her daughter so strong? So, having made that comparison, and nobody knows what happens in the OA, but having compared it to something like that, this deals with quite a serious situation that has been prevalent in the news and stuff. And I'm thinking, okay, if the big question, if I've got to ignore that big question, Jamie, and just go with it, then I'm just focused on what is a horrendous situation that is quite sickly exciting in a Hollywood horror way. I'm just watching a horror. I'm just watching something that maybe the big point of this thing isn't going to say anything profound about the world. It's just going to be suspense. Is it profound? Is the result profound? Is your life, you know, have you really learnt something about life? Is your life better as a result of going on that horrible journey?
Wow. I mean, I did find it is hard to watch at times, but I don't feel like, well, if you're going to do that to me, you've got to give me some profound meaning to life to balance it out. What you do get is, in the midst of some of the horrible stuff, you get some really beautiful moments, and it captures some beautiful relationships and develop between the characters and some, you know, really moving understandings of each other and of like the spiritual journey that they do kind of go on, a lot of the characters. So there is that. But yeah. I mean, but I found it hard to watch, but I find it darker stuff for me watching The Walking Dead than that. I find The Walking Dead harder to watch. Absolutely. Every week. It's so miserable. But I find at least I'm kind of enticed by it. And
but there's no I'm real intrigued. World. There's no real world kind of comparison with that. Is that it's like, I don't know if you two find this, but the older you get, you start to ask yourself the question, why am I watching this, when you're watching things? And for example, you know, if Sarah's got on some like Kardashian type tosh, which she doesn't really, but if something like that is on, and I go, okay, I can totally see how this program is constructed to make you interested in these characters and to tease you and to make you watch the next episode, but why am I watching this? Is this actually healthy? Am I watching this for the wrong reasons, because I'm secretly, darkly enjoying the fact that this horrible thing is going on? Or in the case of the OA, in the case of the Kardashians, it's like, you know, because the worst aspects of human personality are sucked in by this frivolous cosmetic shite.
I don't think I ever asked myself that question. I think I think I sometimes ask, why is a show doing this? Yeah. But I don't think I ever need a wider context to watch something. As long as I'm enjoying it, I don't really care.
I kind of go, what am I putting in my body? You know, I go, why am I eating?
No, I don't do that with my diet or my TV.
Yeah, I'm kind of similar to Matt. I don't find myself, if I don't like something or I'm struggling to watch something, I just stop watching it. I mean, but if I'm finding it fascinating and at the same time disturbing, and I don't reflect too much on that. I just kind of, I stick with it as long as I find there's something redeeming and captivating about it. And it could be that it is horrible. The captivating thing could be the horror of it. It doesn't have to be that it's the wonder of it. So I don't look too deep in. I don't question why I'm watching stuff. If I'm enjoying it, I stick with it. I watched The OA with Lauren. We watched it in like 2 days, and it was over Christmas, because we were just like, this is perfect.
Yeah,
binge.
But we all know that
fodder.
You two are like sadomasochists who would enjoy this kind of thing. It's, there's just been a couple of times when I've gone, is this like playing to the sick, perverted side of our characters rather than cracking on with actually saying something? And that, you know, it's not said a lot to me so far. It's just been exciting, and I'm going to carry on watching it.
You watched 7 series of Chuck.
Yeah, there's nothing damaging about that. It was just pure joy.
Yeah, but what did that say to you?
Pure joy. That's what it said to me. It said, feel great about life.
Yeah. And
plus, I've got a secret CIA bunker under my house, so I had a lot in common with it. So, you know.
That's a good point. Well, I've got a secret dungeon, haven't I? So.
There you go. You should have enjoyed it more. Yeah.
But I've oiled the door now, so you don't hear it at the start of every podcast.
Yeah. Matt Wandless, oiling the door. Brilliant. Well,
I'll be interested to see. I think next week, and you'll probably have finished it by then, I imagine.
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
But I'd be interested to see what you guys, what you think of the final episode, because
how
I imagine
do you feel
they'll be
about
quite.
Parking the change of subject, as usual, and doing another OA next week, which is further down the line. And
A reflection.
I think that's a great idea, because this is a show that's perfect for just, like, coming at it after you've experienced it, and then it'd be interesting to see, because, you know, at the moment you're quite enjoying it, Matt, and you're not sure how you both come out of the experience at the end, because that's a good idea. Let's do that.
I am enjoying it. I just sometimes wonder whether I'm watching whether I'm just going, oh, I'm really concerned for these people, and well, how upsetting to watch them go through this, and then going, oh, but do you have to? Oh no, remember the bit about the Ouija board? Oh no, that was pretty wanky as well. So maybe I don't know. We'll see. But let's do it next week, provided we can all do it. Matt, can you do same time next week?
I don't know.
Okay, let's converse off pod.
I think so.
Great. If you have any thoughts on the OA, please email them to us. Thank you to Muppeteer Andrew James Spooner for saying he's thoroughly enjoying the podcast at the moment. Had a few comments from people saying they're enjoying the podcast, which is nice. But we never get emails. So if you email us, we will get it. Do pop us an email. studio@theboxsetpod.com. studio@theboxsetpod.com. We leave this one mystery unfinished to return to next week. Thank you very much.
You're very welcome.
Thank you. Have a good evening. Now, take some pellets down to those people in the basement.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50. Luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.